Okay, we're live. We had a big pre-show meeting. I wish you guys could have been there for it. We went over a lot of the facts, Jack. It was actually probably better than the show will be this given day. But Dakota, why don't you tell them about our pre-show meeting where we kind of went over statistics, data, and really key metrics for the growth of this show over the next couple of years.
Which is always what we do, right? No, you said we're going live like I'm scared of something, bro. And here we are. I'm always ready to go.
You already know. So Richardson Hitchens versus Gustavo Lemos, which I feel like he had a three-name name. I was never fully – Jesus M., happy Sunday to you as well. We're glad you're already in here. We love it. I feel like I saw people credit Lemos multiple ways. Always love that when a fighter you've never heard of who's really tough deserves more respect. And we're kind of lazy, tired, bored. And we also think the other fighter's exceptional. We kind of write him off. And then you get a spectacular fight. This fight, in a different stylistic way, reminded me of when our guy Richard Abril basically got criminally underrated against Brandon Rios, had a fantastic performance, and then you never heard from him again. What was your thoughts initially about this fight?
Well, my initial thoughts, right, is, I've been real high on Hitchens, like a lot of us have been, and we've seen him do it against pretty solid opposition. We've been watching him go through what would be a pretty typical progression for a fighter of his talent, right? And so when a guy gets in with a guy that we as fans are not familiar with, of course, there's going to be a level of surprise if the fight is anything but a dominant win for Hitchens or for the A-side fighter. But, you know, for me, this was one of those where it was like, I felt like we discovered a new guy, you know, like I feel like we discovered a new guy that could very well be a mix at 140 pounds. You know, that when you have a classic boxer like Hitchens, a lot of times what gives that style problems is the reckless brawler. The reckless power puncher, the guy who's willing to cut distance and is going to do some things that you wouldn't do traditionally to cut that distance. So I just thought Lemos fought a really good fight. I thought he probably won it, to be honest. I thought he probably edged it, particularly with how he closed out. And of course, we get the classic 9-3 for Hitchens, which is not anywhere near reality, but that's nothing new in our sport, is it?
My thoughts exactly is I really thought that this was really his fight to win. I thought Richardson Hitchens put one excuse that I could make for him, and you know I'm in the excuse business, right? That's what pundits do. One excuse could be that the weight cut, you know, the IBF only allows a 10-pound rehydration before the next day. He's a bigger guy. I felt all fight week he definitely had signs of like his face looked very like sucked in. I did start to think about that when this fight got tough. It also felt like the classic tough as hell Argentinian fighter that no one takes serious and then has a great performance, whether it's Maidana, whether it's Diego Chavez. Like there's this tradition of these
Brian Castaño.
Yeah, I mean, there's just this long-standing tradition of like these fighters that everyone's like, oh, that's a given win. And then, like you said, turns into a guy in the division. Do you assess Richardson Hitchens any different after this fight?
I think the short answer to that is no. I still see a really bright future for him, and I see a lot of talent for him. I think for the first time, and this is part of what happens is you start to step up your competition, we're seeing what bothers him. Right. As the guys you fight start to get better and become a little bit more quality and you don't just look dazzling every single round or you fight a style that gives you problems, like we're just figuring out what those things are for him. And now whoever fights him next is going to be on some level taking notes on that. Like, OK, he doesn't like if I just jump in and I close range really fast and I push him around. And, you know, he's I think the MO on him is going to be don't give him any time to think. If you give him any time to think, he's going to outthink you. But if you create that. So I think that's just something to work on. And now that's the next step in his career, right? Is the next time someone's able to do that effectively, you know, is he able to respond a little better?
Next question. Is this his ceiling Or is this just the check mark of being a great fighter, stepping up in competition and having a hard, grueling fight? I don't know if we know the answer, but which one do you lean towards?
I lean towards the latter, bro. Like, I wish he had lost the fight. You know, I wish he had. He did have that one on the end of his record, and I still think he was a really good prospect. You know, because the reality is, I just feel like, you know, Lemos is, I'm telling you, especially with the last two or three rounds, it like doesn't really make any sense that one of these guys would have it 9-3 for Hitchens. Like, it just is not reality.
Well, and to me, I saw the fight 116-112, I believe was my score, if I did the math right, for Lemos. To me, it was the hunger and desire not to be hokey, but I saw one guy forcing the action, landing the meaningful punches, and making one guy uncomfortable, and it really felt like Lemos made this his fight. From the way the fight was contested to the most meaningful punches being landed, he was the one that was landing the shots that mattered more, whereas Hitchens was the one that was kind of negating action, holding, and never able to slow the fight down to make it his type of fight. Why that happened, I'm not sure. It definitely begged more questions than answers about if Hitchens goes on to fight Sabril Matisse, because Matisse, I think, is a supersized version of what he just fought.
Like I said, with him, anybody that's going to give him any kind of space to think, I'm still going to lean towards him. But now we know that this kind of thing bothers him. When he fights this kind of style, he doesn't quite know what to do with himself. And we didn't know that before this fight. Like, you know, even when he fought Jose Zepeda, Zepeda is not reckless. He's a big puncher. He's aggressive, but he's not reckless. This guy was a little bit reckless. This was a jump in with a leaping left hook, you know, jump with the up jab, shorter fighter who throws like chopping punches. And I don't know that we've seen him in with that style. If we have, we haven't seen him in with somebody that good. So credit to Gustavo Lemos. I hope that he's a guy that we get to see more of, bro, because I actually think he's a really exciting fighter.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about whenever fighters like this emerge. I also feel like Lemos is possibly undersized for the division. Is that a weird hot take?
He might be. I mean, he's definitely a shorter guy for the weight class. There's no doubt about it. He's a thick guy. I mean, do you know if he's fought at other weights throughout his career?
Let's do some half-baked research.
Here's the already half-baked research. I know that he fought Lee Selby at 135. So this, to some level, had to have been a new weight class for him because his last fight was at lightweight. So I think the answer is yes, he's undersized for 140. It's probably not his natural weight. But that being said, you know, I think he's, I still think he's a challenge for anybody at lightweight, because
he's bounced between the two over the past few years. So he's danced between 35 and 40. He's kind of fought between the two weight classes really for the last five years. So he's kind of jumped between the two based on opportunity, it seems.
I also think it's not just aggression and recklessness too, right? It's speed. Like, he's got fast hands. He knows how to rip off a combination. He knows how to keep you kind of in your place on the ropes. He's a smart but reckless pressure fighter. It's like a Luis Alberto Lopez, where there's certain kinds of things that are not entirely standard or entirely traditional, but he makes it work for himself. But if I'm Hitchens' corner, you know, that's what we now have to work on. What how do we deal with somebody who is going to put on a kind of pressure that wouldn't be traditionally smart?
Well, I think the we've seen this historically, right? Guys who are technical sometimes don't like that boxing is a physical sport to a certain degree. And the guys that make boxing a physical sport who might be limited can give technical fighters issues. And sometimes guys who think boxing is just a tough man contest can have issues with boxers. But there's always this chicken and the egg argument over what's the most effective style. Is it technique, or is it being just a really tough physical guy? And it always feels like it's the kryptonite of both guys. And it's just at certain points you see it, but it always kind of is in the middle at that point. And this felt like a case in point of a fighter who's very technical, but sometimes when the sport gets physical, there was a level of discomfort with the physicality of the sport.
Yeah. And I, you know, like you said, we've seen that a bunch of times. There was a fight recently that was a lot like that. I'm trying to remember now what it was. I wish I could pull that up off the top of my head. But, you know, I think for Hitchens, man, it's one fight. It really is one fight. I know people are going to try to use this as like a – because that's the thing, right? The minute one of these guys isn't perfect, then it's, oh, see, he ain't all that. And I think that Hitchens is one of the most talented guys in boxing. He's 26 years old. Clearly, Lemos is a world-class fighter. And, you know, this is what happens when you take tough fights. If he was fighting, you know, guys that were ranked 30 and 40 and he was, you know, kicking the shit out of them, everybody would say, Paul, why don't you fight somebody real?
Yeah. I mean, it's boxing kind of sucks in the sense that the minute you take actually interesting and compelling fights, then people start acting as though you're not talented. And the minute you take mismatches, you have guys making creative content around how this guy's the next star. So we've kind of created a monster of people just assume like over evaluating certain levels of fighter to a gross degree, to be honest.
Yeah, it makes it tough for these kids to develop. It makes it tough for them to develop because there's no room in the fans' eyes for error. You know what I mean? And error is an inevitable part of growth. You know what I mean? Even if you're unbeaten, you're going to have a fight at some point that's going to give you a tough time. Floyd Mayweather had 3 or 4 of those, right? I mean, he had 3, 4, you know, the Maidana fight, the Castillo fight, the De La Hoya fight, the Judah fight. He had fights that were close, that were tough fights. That's just a part of boxing, especially when you get up to the highest level. And in retrospect, in another era, if Floyd had had that fight with Jose Luis Castillo, people would have been going, see, I told you, he won all that.
Well, I think that we're in that era of like the genius fan, right? So we got genius guy and we're no different, right? We go on our little soapbox once a week and we're genius guy. And we got genius guys who are just waiting to tell you that this kid that's put 20 years into boxing really isn't as good as a promoter is saying he is, right? That's the modern era. Is I know even though this kid was good in the amateurs and he's spent his whole life being a boxer, I think that he's overvalued. And people are more eager for that moment. Maybe I'm wrong in this, but it feels like there's a bigger reaction to that than there is a moment of greatness. When someone has a Joe Parker comeback, when someone has a Fedora comeback, there's never as much outcry in the sport of boxing. That's I a great see. Point. Even Crawford, it's just, there's always this excitement around, see, I told you Errol Spence wasn't good. It's less people are like, man, Crawford's amazing. Told you Tim Zhu isn't that good. And with Hitchens, it's like Hitchens is amazing to me, but he had a rough fight. It to me, this does not need to be a celebration of told you he wasn't good.
And I also think that if I have one criticism of him, it's that there was a good chunk of rounds. Maybe it was like 3 through 7 or 8. I couldn't tell you bang on, but somewhere in the middle part of the fight, I felt like he found his distance. He found his range. He was boxing smart. And I did want to see I just wanted to see him be able to do that for 12 rounds, right? So that's kind of the goal for the next go round. And that's the growth we're going to be looking for.
Going to the chat, we got my man Boxing Learner. Lamo said he was a lightweight. He said that was his best weight. He missed weight at 135 pounds. I think that that's the reason why he had to fight this at this.
Isn't that why we have such a great chat? You know what I mean?
We have a great knowledgeable fan base. Bingo, Dakota, they're liking what you said. And if you don't look perfect, then you're a bum once again. And then our guy Lionel Watson, one of my esteemed favorite people in the chat. Hitchens gave us a bad fight against Cepeda. Gets criticized for it. Then he gives us an action-packed fight and gets more criticism. Fans are out of control. I think that the other thing that people don't think about that too, Lionel, is the fans are very critical, right? Like, oh, man, this guy's boring. And then the guy tries to give you an action fight and he gets criticized for that. These are also like 25 to 30-year-olds who spend half of their life on phones. So not just are they being criticized, they think they're the center of their own world. And I think that they take too much of that in.
Yeah.
And I think that like people be like, oh, it doesn't affect me. It affects them a ton because the phone is their social tool. And I think now more than ever, you see dramatic changes based on social reactions.
Yeah, that would be another piece of advice that I would have for young fighters is try to, I know that there's so much encouragement to use that as a marketing tool, but I really would try to avoid that as much as possible if I was guiding a young fighter, just so that you're not dealing with the constant feedback loop of whatever algorithm you and your fights become a part of.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I just think, and then Hitchens versus Matisse Paro winner. Well, I mean, that's the plan, right? Because this was an IBF eliminator. So then the winner of that fight, then this fight. I don't think many people are picking Paro in that fight. No disrespect, Paro. But I think given what we think of Sabril Matisse, and I just think that Matisse is a very difficult style for Richardson Hitchens, because what we know is if you don't have the power to keep Matisse off, he's an undeterred will fighter who's more talented than people give him credit for. Also, another criticism is Hitchens too much in the clinch. What do you think of the CompU clinch rating? We don't have, I'm saying that as a joke, but Hitchens clinched a lot. How did you feel about that? And where did that stack up to, in my opinion, the gold standard, which is Devin Alexander versus Randall Bailey, which felt like there was more clinching than fighting in that fight?
Well, first of all, just to go back to Jesus real quick, Matias and Paro is a great fight. I think Matias is the obvious favorite, but I think Leon Paro is a legitimate guy at 140. So that's actually a great fight. I think the clinching was like we've been talking about, a reaction to how uncomfortable the physicality of the fight was making it. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's a symptom of him just not quite knowing how to handle himself against a guy who fights that physically and closes range that quickly.
So this is a perfect segue, almost like a real segue, going into the co-feature, Diego Pacheco versus our guy Sean McCallum. I actually missed an interview with him because I fell asleep and I forgot I had scheduled an interview, so I totally blew him off like an idiot. Sorry, Sean. I feel bad about it still. That was a fight where I told people I was like maybe 60-40 Diego Pacheco, but Sean McCallum, I heard a lot of, I listen to boxing stuff, right? I try to stay relevant, and a lot of people viewed him as a club fighter, and I didn't see him as a club fighter because he had wins over Money Powell the fourth, and he's a guy that has a promoter, Main Events, and I think that people just haven't really cared. Like, he's a guy with a really good record who's fought really tough opposition, but I think that oftentimes, if guys aren't on marquee, big, famous cards, there's a level of, eh, he's not really that good. And I get that undertone with him. This fight, to me, the element that was brought in the second half was clinching. And McCallum was being very criticized for clinching by the referee. I was curious if that dynamic had have happened in the main event, how the main event would have played out differently if clinching wasn't allowed. Because McCallum didn't like when Pacheco came in, like was coming inside right hand doing that. So the answer was clinching. But I don't want to say there was preferential treatment, but there was preferential treatment. The house fighter in one fight was refed a certain way, and then the non-house fighter in the co-feature had a different form of that. I'm curious your thoughts.
I think the difference in that is that the clinching in the McCallman and Pacheco fight was more mutual. Well, actually, that only adds to what you're saying now that I'm really thinking.
That's what I'm, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Because like in that fight, there was more of like a nonverbal agreement of we're both kind of frustrated. We both don't want to punch. Let's treat this almost like a sparring session. Let's get in here and let's have a reset. But McCallum was the one that was getting warned about point deductions. And I feel like it honestly changed his approach to the fight.
I also think he initiated a lot of it early, and by maybe after the seventh or the eighth, it felt like Pacheco was contributing to it a lot more. But that was another great fight. I was thinking about this too. You know, it's like, you know, you're saying that McCallum was being interpreted as a club fighter, which clearly when you're watching him, he's not, right? Like he's a legit guy. He might even be like a world-class fighter. And I think, especially for guys that are in the position of a Diego Pacheco or a Richardson Hitchens, where we just got really talented young guys that are kind of waiting in the wing for their moment, you know, if they can't get these top guys in, they still want to fight a tough guy, right? So they look for legitimate, credible opposition thinking, you know, they'll know I'm not in with Teofimo or Devin or Tank, but you know, I'm not sitting around waiting for him either. And I think they think that all the fans are going to go, oh shit, he's in tough tonight. If he beats this guy, he's the real deal. And the opposite happens where they go, oh, we don't know this fucking guy. He must be a bum and you must be a bum. And that's, you know, that's unfortunate. But that's also, it has to be an uneducated fans who can't look at what they're watching and go, oh shit, yeah, this guy's really good.
Well, sadly, like, I think that our viewership, and I think there's a ton of people that are like that, but I think that there's a level of just burnout of so many fights and so much going on. To me, McCallum is either a world title challenger or a world champion. I'm not sure which, but I think he has the elements of being a top guy.
I think he could be like a Anthony Yard.
Exactly. That's what I'm seeing. Like, I think he's a top guy. And when they made this fight, I thought this was a great fight for Diego to look bad in, because I didn't see a guy who was coming to lose. I saw, even if the fight got away from him, I didn't think his will would be broken. And I think a lot of the guys Diego's stopped, especially lately, he's a very technical fighter, and I'm very high on Diego, but he's breaking guys' wills. He's making it so they don't think there's an outcome for them to win. And I think they're mentally checking out and then physically checking out. And I knew Sean wouldn't have that. And what I saw was like a grown man who knows who he is as a man, and a young superstar boxer who's still, the keyword, young and growing as a person. And I think that matters.
I also think, but for Pacheco, as much as I thought the age thing showed, like you were saying, I was impressed with Pacheco's attention span. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, I think I had it 4-2 or 5-2. No, I had it 4-2 because I had Pacheco won in the fight. And fuck, man, McCallum was doing some tricky shit. You know, he has that standstill and then jump into a burst style, which I think is very difficult to face. And Diego just kind of stuck with it, man, and found his spots, and they weren't easy to find. You know, McCallum there was no gimmies with that guy. So I'm impressed seeing Diego think it through. There's a lot to work on, but I like seeing that attention span.
I don't throw around the word superstar lightly. To me, Diego has the makings of being a boxing superstar because of his boxing intelligence. And Sean McCallum will upset another top fighter because he has this, like you said, he has this ability of seeming like almost like a down and out loser, very calm. And then he has these bursts of explosive, like one punch knockout power, in my opinion. And he's very tricky because I think that threw Diego off with how relaxed he was, but he wasn't passive.
It's a tough rhythm to catch. It's a tough rhythm to catch because he's not giving you anything really to look at. And then once you throw, it's like, oh, he's not switched off. That's just how he holds himself, you know?
And Sean is like a real throwback fighter in the sense where, like, I don't think this is going to break him. I think that he's probably leaving this fight feeling this was a draw, or maybe even thinking he won. I think that because of how the main event ended, people aren't talking about this fight, but this was a very, very close fight that I think the referee changed the outcome of the fight by saying, like, hey man, don't clinch, when Diego kind of won some of those last rounds where I feel like he was on pins and needles about, am I going to lose a point?
Yeah, I think that was a factor, but I couldn't say that I think it impacted the outcome. And the only reason I say that is because it's like, I think he would have, I do think it was, he was the majority of the holding. Certainly not all of it, but he was the majority of the holding. And I think that, again, like in the Hitchens fight, it started to become a sign that what Diego was doing was making him uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it, you know, it is what it is. You know, we can sit up here and complain all day. Diego did what he had to do to win a fight. And it's not, he was losing that fight through 4 rounds, through 5 rounds. He was having a tough fight. And Diego made an adjustment that a lot of people would struggle to make. He did something to catch rhythm against a guy who basically, as you said, Sean's whole style is to make you so you can't catch rhythm and you're stuck in first gear the whole fight.
Right.
He figured out a way to land his right hand. He figured out a way to get effective. To me, he showed a championship trait against a guy who's a top 20 middleweight, super middleweight. And what the shame of this fight is, because Sean isn't famous enough and because people don't research it, people are going to look at it as like, man, he had a tough time with this guy until he upset someone. And people what this reminds me of is when Joseph Adorno and Jermaine Ortiz had that terrific Top Rank undercard fight. And now people realize what Jermaine Ortiz was when that fight happened, but they didn't give that fight the due at the time because they're like, oh, who are these guys? Why does it matter? Etc. This fight felt eerily similar to that, with Diego possibly just having just a little too much. But I think Sean is going to go on and have his own run.
I agree with that. And like I said, that's the issue, right? If you know, when these guys go out of their way to take tough fights, even if it's against unknown guys, a lot of the fans go, oh, don't know him, must be a bum. So if you had a hard time, you must be a bum too. And I hate that line of thinking.
So let's go with Sky Nicholson. Any observations that you have about Sky? I mean, definitely comes from central casting for like Girl Next Door vibes. Like that's like kind of the Sky Nicholson experience. Have to say she gives me for some reason Demetrius Andrade vibes in terms of the rhythm that she fights. Like her whole style is just kind of like a jazz musician to throw you off, but in just like this kind of weird purist sense. I will say the thing that I most enjoy about her, besides like the optics of just being like not looking like a boxer, is she's really staying active and challenging champions. And I think that that's really interesting. And I think Sky having a belt on top of her looking like a model, and she's going to bump into the main card spot pretty easily based, I think, on like the appearance and being a great interview. I think she's going to pursue great fights rather quickly because she's showing us that she's like, okay, I won this. Let's call out Amanda Serrano. There's a level of competitor in her that I always want to see from the top champions that I'm actually, let's just say it for what it is. I'm not seeing it from Canelo. I'm not seeing it from some of these top guys that the sport needs to see for our sport to grow, we need our biggest names to be competitors, to be in competitive fights. And I guess when I see a new champion, men or woman, I always get excited when it seems like it's going to be an active champion and someone pursuing the best fights possible. And I felt like her dominant win possibly led to a new era of women's boxing.
Well, and I think I agree with everything you just said. And then on top of that, she's got great feet. She's got great timing. She got great sense of distance. She really knows how to get around in the ring. Like we've talked about this. That's why I think she would give Amanda a hard time, because Amanda kind of has to set her feet to let her hands go. And I think that Sky would kind of keep her turning and keep her moving in a way that she wouldn't be able to ever fully get comfortable in. So, you know, I'm all in on Sky Nicholson, man. I think she's fun. I like how she got a little charisma after, and she knows how to put on a show. You know, some people don't like that, but I think that, you know, it's all in good fun. So I'm all in.
Yeah, it's I mean it's exciting, bro. It's exciting. I like having relevant.
What's the fight for her? What's the fight for her?
I think it's Amanda. Here. I mean, Ella Scottney she's fights this week. I think she's around the weight class. I mean, I think she's gonna be the money fight for a lot of these young fighters. I think, you know, a lot of the interesting names have now left that division, like Alicia Baumgartner. We don't know what division she's at, but like that was a one. They say they prefer Bree Howling to Sky Nicholson. I'm not sure. Do you know Bree Howling?
I haven't seen her.
I mean, the thing I like about Sky was I saw her in the 2021 Olympics, and I'm like, okay, she looks like she's like the lead in like Rear Window. She looks like she's like the teen heartthrob, but she can move and box. And I'm like, if she turns pro with the right promoter, she could be something. And her willingness to fight so often made me go, okay, there's something here. There's more. This is more than just smoke and mirrors, because there's a genuine passion for the sport. And but I'm beating around the bush. I think Ellis Scott needs a great fight for her. See, the problem is, it's like,
I'll give you one. Delphine Persoon. And I think part of why that's a great fight too is stylistically, it's that reckless pressure fighter that might actually trip her up and dirty up some of that clean footwork. So that, I think that would be a super interesting fight. And I can't imagine too difficult to make.
Yeah. You know, it's definitely, it's a, my phone keeps ringing.
Congrats.
Like, it's just, it's not the best feeling. It's like, I'm like trying to formulate opinions and my phone's just like, go. But I don't know. I think she's an interesting figure in the sport of boxing. I think she can really fight. I think the way she looks makes people go, wait, she's a boxer. I think that's always good for the sport when you get like the double take. Wait, I can't believe you're a boxer, because I think that now has people interested to follow her and then maybe possibly watch a boxing match and become more of a fan of another fighter, which then creates boxing fans. So I think there's a lot to like about her. It's just, how big can the events be with her? Can she have her Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano fight? Can she get a Katie Taylor fight? You know, because like, I mean, maybe if everything works out, she could sneak into a Katie Taylor fight.
Well, she's kind of like Michaela too, where she's tall and she's long. So she's got the frame to change weights, I think, if she should want to.
Yeah. I think that's the hard part about women's boxing. The highest levels in the right weight classes, it's amazing right now, but there's a lot of gaps in divisions. Yep. So you're seeing women jump weight classes just based out of financial necessity to get big fights. And it kind of makes you wonder just how deep the sport is, just from a purist standpoint, because like the men's, you can't see someone going from 130 to 154 and jump into the top three. And that just kind of, I don't know how to say it nicely, but it's like it kind of shows you the depth in divisions right now based on that occurring.
Oh, and there are definitely weight classes, particularly in women's boxing right now, that are not dense. I think there are a handful of those divisions in men's boxing right now. The perfect example would be middleweight, where if somebody like Errol Spence or Terrence Crawford or Fundora were to move up, they would instantly become likely the biggest name in the division.
And that's true. It's just, I feel like I don't know if you heard that, but my phone keeps ringing, bro. It's like, I'm like trying to formulate a thought. I think, bro, that there's
your mom. You said what's up already. She's trying to get your attention.
Yeah, my mom's trying to get my attention. It's crazy. I think that like with women's boxing, it's like you have these fighters that you really want to see in fights. And then like, because maybe people aren't as big of fans for whatever reason, there's more of a leap. Like, how can we get Baumgartner in with Clarissa Shields? I don't even know if it's a real fight. Like, is that even a real fight that's being discussed, or is it just kind of like an internet thing?
I think it's an internet thing. And I think that they boost each other up by doing that. I think it's that simple.
I just know for me, and this is how I know I'm old, it's just not fun. Like, I just don't like to see things in which people argue and there's no like fight at the end. It's just like, I can go down to like many places, the movie theater, a restaurant, a golf course, and I can see people argue. Does it matter if they're famous and I don't find arguments fascinating unless there's an end result of something of consequence.
But casual boxing fans may think that that is a possible matchup or that is a fight that could get made. And so that's who that is for, is people who may not see behind that curtain that shit's not real.
And I guess I'm just so jaded and in the business that I don't even understand that person anymore.
I don't either.
You know what I mean? And it's like, I've always said this, and I've said this about our show, and we might only have as many people tuned in, but the people who've tuned in are great boxing fans, and we're glad to be able to do this. I'd rather make intelligent content than just make content. And I wish we treated our boxing fans as smart as I think our boxing fans are. I wish we gave people intelligent content. If that's really going on, can we allude to there's something going on behind the scenes? When boxing does things that just feel like a high school, get sent to the principal's office type deal, when boxing loses me.
And I think it's a really ineffective attempt at bringing in casual fans. I think ultimately that's who that's for.
And should we even cater to casual fans anymore? Because I don't think there are casual boxing fans anymore. So
what other sport caters to casual fans? I don't see the NBA explaining what a screen is when they are broadcasting a game. You know, I don't see NFL commentators explaining what offsides means. You know what I mean?
Well, I just think we're so desperate for the quote-unquote casual fan, right? Oh, the casuals will buy it. I think the casual fans will buy fights that the boxing fans say you need to see this fight. Like, yes, that's my belief. Like, I think that, like, making good fights will magically bring in the casual fan. And I think that some of these things like Chatty Patty or grudge matches, I don't think that the casual fans are like, oh, man, I've been waiting to see these two argue. I'm going to not watch the Final Four game. I'm going to watch these two because I saw an argument. And I think that boxing in a way, it sometimes, and it's probably the business or something, the easiest way to save boxing is just by making good fights because everyone wants to see a good fight. Yet the way boxing is structured right now, networks are too powerful because networks are aligned directly with promoters the way it's set up. So because of that, there's direct conflict of interest between networks and promoters to make the best fights. I think the biggest issue is the networks need to not be exclusive to promoters and need to be exclusive to making great fights. So then the promoters have to bid to make great fights. And until we get to that point, we're going to always see political fast talk and jargon and manipulation of like, this actually makes more sense.
Or is it the other way around? Do the promoters have to do a better job of working together to make these kinds of fights happen separate from the networks and then figure out which network, you know, provides the best service to them? You know what I mean? As opposed to having these long-term network promoter contracts that sort of limit who and where your fighters can fight.
It's chicken and the egg argument. Any other fights on this Matchroom card you want to talk about?
There was actually, hold on, let me just look at the box real quick. What was the one directly before Scott Nicholson's fight?
Gallify?
Yeah. Bro, it's like he has moments where I really get the hype, and then he just out of nowhere is so hittable. I can't really figure out what to make of him because you see him cut those angles. You see how fluid his offense is. He really has some qualities of a high-level fighter, but it's tough to figure out.
Can I give my theory?
Yeah.
They're rushing him.
They're definitely rushing
him. Like part of that is like I get – he's an Olympic gold medalist, and he was one of my favorites in the Olympics. But, like, to start him in 10-round fights and put him in with seasoned veterans and move him towards a title very quickly, I get it financially. You're probably paying him a lot and stuff. But I wish he would have gotten that 6-round, that 8-round, a couple of 8-rounders, etc. Let me look and make sure I'm not talking out of turn, but I'm pretty sure all of his fights have been scheduled 10-rounders.
They've all been 10.
So it's like – he went, and this is a little inside boxing, but this is just my opinion here. When you go into 10-round fights, you can't really fight a quote-unquote bad fighter because they have to be sanctioned to go 10 rounds, which means they pass a certain threshold. So I think part of the problem is he's not able to learn on the job per se. He's having to be in these fights that are very difficult, tough fights, even if he makes them look easy or whatever. He's getting hit more. And I think part of the problem with him is I see an incredibly talented fighter who – for whatever reason, is being moved very quickly and having to sink or swim.
Well, I think part of it is his age. He's in his early 30s. And I think the other thing is Lomachenko set a very difficult precedent where if you're a highly accomplished, older, decorated amateur fighter, the expectation is that you'll be able to go pro as a finished product. And clearly he still has some things he's got to work on. I also think he's got the time to work on him regardless of his age. But if he's going to get cracked that clean, like, it's going to be tough for him to even beat like a Julio Cesar Martinez, who we've both been very vocally critical of. But it's like, if you're going to stand there and take shots, Martinez is going to knock you out.
I mean, it's just, I thought I was so excited about him as a pro, and I still think he's very promising, but he needs at least a year of not being in the highest level fights, because he's just, he's so good, but he's so limited in terms of his defense. He's so offensively focused. He needs just more experience, and I'm not sure he's going to get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he is going to get it because he's in there fighting with top guys. So I feel like at some point it is going to click. But, and again, how would stepping down to a level of competition that he's above really help him to develop that in a sense, you know? Like, what does it do for him to take easy? Does that help him, his defense, to take lesser competition when he's clearly kind of at that level already?
Yeah, I mean,
That's the conflict, right? It's like, I just don't think his defense is going to get better if you put him in with lesser
opposition. Well, I get what you're saying. I'm just saying, like, I think that he's always going to be a flawed defensive fighter, but there is a reason you progress fighters in a certain way, and you don't throw a Tiger Johnson into a 10-round fight early because you want to give him that time. I get that he's older. I'm going to assume part of the reason he's being moved quick is he's being paid a lot, and there also is an expectation from him and his team to be in world title fights rather soon. But I think that he's by doing that, he's limiting his growth potential, because defense is probably just as important, if not more important, than offense in the pros. And he's not really improving in that aspect. It's just coming down to how tough he is and how physical he is. He's already had a fight where, like, his defense really failed him, and it was a really close fight that probably could have gone either way. And that's just troubling, because there's a level of foreshadowing for him. And in the Olympics, he was the most fun guy. Like, he came out pressure, stopping people, and it's just not fully translating.
Well, and look, he absolutely dominated the first four or five rounds of this fight. And then at some point, the guy clips him, and he gets pretty badly buzzed just from getting hit super clean. And all of a sudden, now you're in a dogfight for three rounds, and you're taking punishment you don't need to take. It's like, when you're that dominant for four rounds, I don't want to have any doubt that this is some way going to get away. And regardless of what kind of lead he has, I don't feel like it's a safe lead with him.
Yeah, I just think that he's the classic, like, really good amateur who doesn't have the quote-unquote amateur style. He's like, in many ways, some of his flaws are what some of the criticisms that my guy Mark Castro gets. Mark Castro, an amazing amateur, but what was he as an amateur? He was a high-volume pressure fighter. I've always compared Mark Castro to, like, Leo Santa Cruz.
Yeah, but Mark's way harder to hit.
And that's what I'm going to say right there. People love to point out that Mark is, like, getting hit. Mark, to me, doesn't get hit that flush. Like, he's rolling with shots. He's a high-intelligence fighter. To me, Gallify is having the issues people say Mark Castro is having. And he's at a higher level. And Mark is getting to learn at these smaller levels. And you see him improving with these tests. With Yafai, he's at the highest level, and he's not improving. And he's about to fight the world champions. I'm not saying he has a ceiling, but I'm saying this is probably what his career is going to look like.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and before we move on from this card, I'm seeing Boxing Learner that he prefers Bree Howling over Scott Nicholson. Are you familiar with Bree Howling?
This deja vu, I've tried. I don't know her yet. So I'm going to do some research. We're going to do a Bree Howling minute next week.
We need our chat, yo. You guys keep us on our toes. You got facts for us when we need them.
Like a good offensive lineman, they're light. They're light on their feet, but heavy. That's what we need. We need some heavy guys. Light on their feet. I think that wraps up that card. Steven Navarro, impressive pro debut. Mark Castro, I thought he got very professional rounds against Abraham Montoya, who's a very tough guy, been tough with guys. And Harley Medeiros Love Harley Medeiros. Know him since the amateur, from your area. Love the nickname Dennis the Menace. I love nicknames where it's another person's name. Love that he's Harley, Dennis the Menace, Medeiros. Love that. He had a good win. It was a solid card, but it also felt like a card that just came the week after a pay-per-view. Like, it very fittingly is like, okay, we're stuck between some big fights. This is our card. We want to keep these guys busy, but it's also, you know, opening up a new venue, Fontainebleau, Las Vegas. You know, it was actually a great fight card to kind of open the venue. Good piece of trivia. Let's jump over to this week's big fight, which that is Jared Big Baby Anderson versus Riyad Mirahi. Said it perfectly. What's your expectation going into this?
I don't have any expectations, bro. It's tough to know what Jared's going through as a person. Like, I can talk about his athletic talent all I want, which he's got plenty of it, but it's just, I don't know where he's at as a man. And I just think that's going to dictate more of how his fights go.
I can speak to a little bit of this. I talked to Prentice Brewer, who is an assistant coach for him. I've got a story coming on Boxing Scene probably tomorrow or the next day with him, where he shares some insight into Jared's camp, and he's the second assist. Derry Riley's still the head coach. And it sounds like, though, from the outside looking in, Jared had troubles. It seems like the gym is his sanctuary, and he's able to channel life's frustrations or anything that he might have, and that he's having a very good camp. And that the big thing that I kept hearing was his hands are incredibly fast for a heavyweight. Like, Prentice was telling me, he's got like middleweight hand speed was the exact quote. And the expectation is really that Jared, in a couple of years, they think he could be the best heavyweight in the world, is the genuine expectation I'm getting from that team. So I think that, yes, that's the team. But I think when you talk about, like, okay, he's had some outside of the ring issues, I think that a team wouldn't speak this way if there wasn't an underlying confidence in what they see in the gym. I get there's a level of marketing, but that's just my impression. Like, I typically, when like there's red flags or fears within a team, they kind of say it in a hinted way. Like, he's going to become, he's doing really good in the gym, and he might be able to, like, words like might be coded. I mean, the level of confidence speaking to his team about him told me that I don't really think those are issues we're going to see at, especially this level. This is a cruiserweight who's smaller than him, a guy that I don't think has the hand speed. Honestly, I don't think this goes more than four rounds. I think this is
we've already had enough of these fights where Jared, already a smaller modern heavyweight, fighting another guy smaller than him, which I don't feel like does anything particularly to develop him or answer any questions about him. But I mean, Kevin Lorraine is a hell of a fighter. So I'm not going to make any assumptions. Now, Mary is also coming off a win over Tony Yoka. I know Yoka's had a couple of upset losses, but that's a guy who's 6'6", 6'7". So if we're talking about, does he know how to deal with size? I think he does, basically. So it may be an interesting fight, but I think the expectation already is that Jared is one of the most gifted fighters at heavyweight.
Let me just fill you in. The expectation is Jared's the most promising American heavyweight really since Riddick Bowe. He's more promising than Deontay Wilder was. Deontay Wilder's become a star, but Jared's really extremely promising. He's got a crazy personality, like that ring entrances, and he's very charismatic, and he's like, people believe that he's going to be the face of boxing, essentially. And I think what everyone is saying, and now I'll let you go back to what you're saying, is they're expecting a superstar performance. He's going in with a guy no one's ever heard of, really, and no one's seen on American television, and they're fighting in his adopted hometown of Texas. This is supposed to be a performance, in my opinion, where he enters the ring looking like the better fighter and makes it very clear that he's very close to being in fights with superstar boxers.
I could get a little more excited about it if he was fighting guys that were the size of those guys that he's ultimately going to have to get through.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely going to be tuned in, because I think Jared Anderson's one of the most compelling stories in boxing. Like, his story arc is one of the most interesting currently. But, like, as a single fight, this is probably one where you're like, okay, it's good to see him back. Where does this lead? Yeah. Right? Because if this goes 10 rounds, we're probably going to be sitting up here a little frustrated. I think the expectation is
this unless he boxes a beautiful fight. You know, I don't have anything wrong if he wants to get some rounds and show us, you know, some other tools that he's got. It's the type of 10. If it's a Charles Martin 10, you know, that's not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah, I just think that when you have a fighter in the heavyweight division that doesn't have the offensive gifts and can match his hand speed with either size or stuff, Jared's shown that he's probably going to hurt these guys and make it quick. You know, that's kind of what he showed in the bubble is like, if you don't have an answer for that, he's just really ruthless in the way he punches. He's Big Baby's a good nickname. The real good real Big Baby is a great nickname for him because he really loads up on big shots. It's almost like a little kid, like he's waiting to counter you with some heavy punches. And I'm kind of expecting him to catch this guy with something thunderous in the first or second round,
which I'm sure he will. My whole thing is, how does that translate against somebody who's 6'7" and really knows what they're doing? Is it that destructive? Oh, Lukey did the classic leave me solo in the middle of the show. Can't even click on your guys' comments, but I'm just going to keep going through. Maggie Crazy says, Ruben Villa any good? Ruben Villa is a very good fighter. Definitely somebody smart. Yeah, bro, he's back. He did the thing where he left me hanging for a
minute. I left you hanging. But, like, I think it's an interesting main event, right? Like, I mean, this month, you know, to be honest, we've had, like, probably, like, a couple of good fights, two of the fights are at 108 pounds, which our fans are super thrilled happened. And then we had the Otabek and Ray Ford fight, which was fantastic. But it's really been a lot of kind of like, hey, we're setting the table for something. And this Jared Anderson Top Rank card kind of feels like, hey, we're setting the table for something more promising. Man K Crazy asks, is Jared Anderson being just more honest when he says he wants to make bank and retire? I think that's a generational thing, to be honest. I hear a lot with like people younger than me. Maybe Dakota can talk about this. Maybe I'm old, but there is like this sense of like, I want to make a ton of money. It's kind of like a tech attitude. I want to make money for 5 years and then retire and then do whatever I want and whatever. And I think that's also kind of like a Instagram generation of everything immediate, everything now. There's not like, I don't hear a lot of people going, you know, I went to Charles Schwab and I set up a 30-year retirement plan and some Roth IRAs and long-term investment strategies. I think that there's a focus amongst a lot of people right now of here and now, as opposed to like a long-term. And I think that a lot of those opinions, probably sincere, also reflect an Instagram culture of like, how can I accumulate as much money as possible? Because that will immediately make me as relevant in the world. Like my followers match my amount of dollars I have in my bank account. I think that's, I don't want to belittle how he feels because I know he comes from poverty and that's a big driving factor. But I also think Jared's also a product of this generation, which is immediate gratification on phones. And I think that plays in it to it too, in my opinion.
I think all of what you said is true. I think that's the negative end. I think the positive end is we have generation after generation of fighters who stuck around too long and suffer from it after the fact, you know, and their lives are not the same. And I think young fighters see that as the legacy of some of their favorite fighters and are not interested in mirroring that. And in a sport that's so brutal, if you can, you know, hit a lick and run, a lot of them are going to do it and say that they want to do it and are not going to be willing and might even scoff at the idea that I'm going to do this until I can't talk.
Do you see Jared Anderson fighting the winner of Kay Bell versus Frank Sanchez down the line? I think he's due for us. I don't really see many. I think Frank's going to win that fight. I just don't see anybody lining up to fight me and Dakota's boy Frank because he's a very hard to hit guy. You're going to get zero credit for fighting him. People like he'll fight amazing fights and people will just love to crap on him. He is being avoided because he gets no praise whatsoever. and he's very hard to fight. And then when he gets engaged in a fight, he basically just knocks you out.
Yeah, I mean, he's a, you know, and by the way, he's in a real fight. Agit Kabayel is, after watching him against Magomedov, he's a hell of a fighter. And I also seen him against Chisora a few years ago. This is probably the toughest fight that Frank has had. And I think getting a win like this
should vault him to where he should be already ranked.
Right. I'm gonna give the real answer, which is hopefully it at least puts him in a different kind of fucking conversation.
And then let's go into the co-main, which is, I think, a very interesting fight, which is Efe Ajogba versus Guido Vianello. Very competitive, even fight. You know, I'm a big Efe guy. I really like Efe Ajogba. I think that he's really transcended his style and become one of the more interesting heavyweights who was kind of written off prematurely. You know, he's really resurrected his career, had a fantastic 2023. And to answer the question, I think the winner of that fight really does fight Frank Sanchez. I think that's a perfect fight to make.
That is a perfect fight to make. There's no doubt about it. I think I was in person to see Guido's last fight, and I was extremely impressed with how he looked. Just the patience, how he was setting up his shots, how he was really sitting down on his punches in a different kind of way. So I personally think that Guido has a very, very good chance in this fight. I'm not as interested in Efe as a fighter per se, but the fact that he's one of those guys that consistently takes interesting fights makes him interesting to me, if that makes sense.
I mean, his style is very much a style only a mother could love. It's very much jab, jab, move around, and then try to hit you with a sledgehammer. It's not like the traditional, like, man, this is fun. But, like, his road that he has taken over the past year, I don't know how you could not enjoy it, because it's like he's taking every fight people turn down, essentially. So, I mean, to have this as the co-main event, I think is very compelling. I think this is a loser-leaves-town match, to be honest with you. I don't know where the loser of this fight goes. I think if Guido wins, he fights Jared Anderson.
I hope so. That would be a fantastic matchup, and I would love to see Jared fight the winner of Ajogba and Vianello. Those are the kinds of fights I think that I'm more interested in seeing him in. Again, those guys are the size of the top modern heavyweight for the most part, outside of Usyk.
Okay, so just some news and notes on the undercard. We got an undercard. We got Robson Koncakau is on the undercard. We got a sneaky great fight, Charlie Suarez versus King Louis Correa. Love that fight. We got our guy Abdullah Mason on the undercard. And in the chat, they asked us, is Ruben Villa good? Ruben Villa is exceptional.
I was actually getting ready to go on a Ruben Villa rant when you disappeared, just to sort of sing his praises a little bit. Very excited to watch Ruben.
Go on the rant.
Well, I just think he's a fantastic boxer, really well-rounded skill set. And, you know, I think the more people get to see him, the more they're going to be interested in seeing him at the top of 130 pounds, especially as 130 becomes a sneaky good weight class right now. We were talking about this last week. 130 is getting sneaky good.
Yeah, I mean, it's look, when the best fighters fight, we find out who are the best, and it's weird how the weight classes become good. The weight classes
well, that we had two of them in a month, right? We had Shock Foster and Nova, and then we get Liam Wilson and Oscar Valdez. Oh, and throw in Navarrete and Conceição. Like, not every weight class is making this kind of happen.
But I mean, like, imagine if middleweight, like Ian Green got to fight, Joe Sean got to fight, Javi Martinez, Troy. Imagine if they all got relevant fights at the top of the division. Magically, that would be a popular
issue. All of a sudden, middleweight would be one of the stars. That's what we've been saying, though, right? The problem with middleweight is not the talent pool. The problem is the matchmaking and the fact that nobody who's interesting seems to be anywhere in the same atmosphere.
And I think that's every division in boxing, even women's boxing, for a matter, is like when you don't have the fighters at the top fight, where they're not consistently fighting.
I mean, but 140 guys are fighting, 130 guys are fighting.
That's where the divisions are interesting. But when I'm saying 160, 175, the cruiserweight, where like these divisions have a lack of interest, it's based around there's too many people just kind of buying their time, sitting around.
fucking welterweight, bro.
Welterweight become a ghost land.
Who gives a shit about the welterweight division now? And there's a lot of talent in it, but how can I give a fuck if none of them are anywhere near each other?
And it's all based around activity. Ruben Vietami, future world champion. He's amazing. I really like his cerebral approach to boxing. I think this is a sneaky good undercard, and I'm going to tell you once again, don't miss the Charlie Suarez, King Louis Correa fight. I think that could be the fight of the month, possibly could be the fight of the year, because they're both two people who stand in front of each other and they bang, you know? So as long as the chins hold up, this could be a fun one, you know?
Yeah, I don't think I've seen Correa, but I'm looking forward to seeing that one.
He was the guy that probably beat Hobson Consecau back on a Top Rank undercard. He dropped him and had that close fight with him. Do you remember that?
I don't think I saw that one. Was so it before Valdez?
It was before Valdez.
I didn't see it. I didn't see it.
Okay, and it was a he's a Robert Garcia trained fighter, and he's pretty friggin' good, and he always comes in shape, and it's an exciting matchup. Just because this is a slow week, we're going to just run through. We got Jordan Gill versus Zelpha Barrett. What's your level of enthusiasm on that fight?
It's actually kind of high because I really like Zelpha Barrett. I mean, I think he's one of the British fighters who I think he lost to Shavkat Rakhimov, but Rakhimov is one of the top guys at the weight class. I think Zelpha Barrett's a very exciting guy, and I think that, you know, my level of excitement around Jordan Gill is up since he knocked out Mike Conlon. That wasn't necessarily an outcome that I saw coming, particularly with Gill's lack of knockouts, but I just think he showed, aside from Conlon maybe being a little bit faded, I think that Gill showed a level of physicality that he hasn't before. So I actually think this is a great fight.
I think it's an exciting domestic fight, you know, and if you don't have hobbies, or if you're in for the weekend, or you don't want to do something and you're in, it would have been a great, it's a great bout to watch. The chat is throwing a lot at us, so I got to get to these before I get back. I think I'm excited about it too. I'm excited about the pomp and circumstance of the fight as well as we lead into it. We got a new face in the chat, Adam Hurley, and he said Jared versus Fabio Wardley would be a doozy. That would be
absolutely.
More of these big guys need to go to cruiserweight. It would need some big names. I think that's true. Correa is good, said a member in the chat that I can't pronounce your name. Adam Hurley, once again, active member. I'd like to Benavidez and Morel at cruiserweight along. That would be awesome. You know, those are two guys that can make it. One of my favorites. I don't know what that was. Why did Henry LeBron pull out? He was in a big fight, I guess, on the Top Rank undercard. Maybe he was in the Charlie Suarez fight against Louis Correa. If I had to guess why he pulled out, probably was hurt, but I don't know. Gotten robbed so many times though. That has to do with King Louis.
He's talking about Correa.
Yeah. And, King Louis got screwed a couple of times in the bubble. So King Louis has a fan base. But back to the Zelpha Barrett, Jordan Gill fight. I think that really I'm excited about this fight because of Jordan Gill and the performance he had with Mick Conlon, like you said. If he didn't have that type of performance, he would have been the guy that got knocked out by Kiko to me, and I wouldn't be excited. But the fact that he came back, beats Michael Conlon, possibly retired Michael Conlon for all we know, that's interesting.
It had that kind of feel. It had like the feel of the end of the line for Conlon.
Had the end of the movie energy. Yeah.
Yeah, and he still has a skill set, right? Like his reflexes are still good and everything. He just can't take the same kind of – he can't take the punishment anymore just from having a couple tough fights, knockout losses. And I think that, again, I thought that Gill just raised his game one level to get himself where he could really kind of dominate that fight.
Okay, and then we got Ella Scottney on the undercard. Thoughts on Ella Scottney?
I think she's another really talented women's fighter in a tough weight class where there's not that many interesting matchups for her, but I think she's great. She's a really smart pressure fighter.
Also a very thoughtful follow on social media, which you never really say social media and thoughtful, but it seems like she's one of the rare fighters. Like when the Conor Benn fight got canceled, I think she went on social media to be like disgruntled. And it's like, wow, a real person that has like real time emotions of frustration. And it's like, I've kind of gotten to know her more so less for her fighting, sadly, and more for her being like a reasonable boxer that when things happen in Britain, she might go on Twitter and not say something horrible.
Give me an example.
Like that. That was my example. It was like kind of like the Conor Benn situation. It's like, okay, I've seen her fight a couple of times, but it was like, I remember her just kind of like being like, man, that sucks. I'm not going to get paid, you know? And like, there's like kind of like I put a lot into this and I thought this was going to change my life. Oh, and I think another instance was I think she got taken off a card because another fighter had an issue with her or team being on the card, and she just like blatantly said it on social media, like, I'm being pulled from this card based on the politics of boxing. So I feel like she's occupying kind of like the Max Homa in golf space, like where it's like he's this pro golfer, but he goes on the internet and shares fan opinions with the fans, but he's also not a jerk. Like normally when you're a fan, you're saying like something like racist or sexist or something horrible. It's like he says something like heartfelt and thoughtful, but it's also from a fan's point of view. I think that she kind of gives me vibes of that.
Well, yeah, it's just like you said, it's a fuller spectrum of emotion and of a person, you know. I think that a lot of times in boxing, if you show that full spectrum or you say the quiet part out loud, there's almost like you keep it down. You know what I mean? And she doesn't entirely do that.
And then there's Brianna Dixon, who I think is also a potential Skye Nicholson opponent in the future. She's fighting for a world title. I think she has a great story. I forget her full story, but I think she was like a medical student or some nurse practitioner of some sort. Meets like Anthony Carolla, if I'm remembering right. And then he becomes her coach. I think it was like white collar boxing. And now she's about to probably more than likely win a world title, or at the very least be in a world title fight. I think she's an interesting figure. Once again, fits the bill of this is a story that could be in Time magazine, gets people interested in boxing. Is it going to be the best boxer of the year? Probably not. But I think there is a purpose to people that like capture the imagination and is like a great folk hero story, because boxing, not unlike, well, actually, I think boxing more than any other sport, it's like we honor our history more than any other sport, I believe, because of the way champions are remembered. But beyond just that, I think we also have this lasting legacy of narrative and folklore. So we really love like fantastical journeys of the average person becoming great. And I think that she embodies that.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that for sure.
Okay. Did I say anything factually incorrect about her? Because I was totally winging that.
I don't think you did, Bob.
That's great, Bub. Before we get out of here, let's get a couple of questions from the chat. This will be called final question. Something crazy happened in the golf tournament. My girlfriend just did the most adorable low-pitched yes chant, so she didn't disrupt the podcast. She did a yes. Like, so something amazing just happened in the other room, just to let everybody know. And it was adorable, too, so I appreciate it. Maybe
you guys won the lottery.
don't say that, Bub. Okay, so what do you think of a fight between Gustavo Lemos and Pitbull? Take this, Dakota.
Man, I love that fight. I love that fight. I mean, I would have to favor Pitbull just because of just the level of dominance and him being in with Tank Davis. But that's what I'm saying. Gustavo Lemos, I think, you know, put himself onto the scene as a real guy at 140. And thank you, Adam Hurley. I really appreciate that.
And Adam, thank you. But like at the same time, it's like it's about speaking to an intelligent and informed audience. So even if we don't have the biggest quote unquote fan base, at least we have a group of people that love tuning in every Sunday. And that's what we do it for. We do it for the passionate hardcore because we get enough numbers to keep us motivated. And our numbers are going up. They're not going down. So we believe, I believe, and I think I speak for Dakota in this sense, that what we bring to the table is a lot. And it just takes an Adam Hurley jumping in the chat, sharing the show with their buddy, enjoying the show. And I think that we have a trickle down effect where once one person listens, we're very confident that our program is as intelligent, as competitive, as compelling as any other product out there. As fair, and we believe we stand next to anybody. So we do this because we know that if people listen, we think they will keep coming back.
well said, my friend. That I think just to add to that, I think like you get to a point as a creator, you know, whether it's in boxing, if it's writing, for me, it was music. Like we all get into these things not to fucking try to trick an algorithm that some fucking tech tycoon created. We're here to make cool shit. We're here to make shit that we're proud of. And at a certain point, you make that choice to kind of let that fight with the algorithm go.
Well, and we just started this channel less than a year ago, and we've got a lot of growth, you know, like a lot of people, like you could say that this channel doesn't have a lot of followers, but really like for 1 year, we've grown tremendously, you know, and it's like, I haven't been able to focus on it solely, but I really appreciate everyone.
A lot of that I think is our viewers and the guys in the chat, right? It's like, you guys keep coming back, and that's part of it. It helps a lot. It's part of what makes this show go is that we have a following and a comment section that is like an actual participant in what we're doing.
And people that aren't just like, hey guys, Ryan Garcia was like dressed up like a dog. And
well, yo, Mike Tyson versus Muhammad Ali, who you got?
Yeah, I mean, I think that like what gets me excited is we're talking about the new legends of the sport. We're talking about things that historians at some point might go back to this show and go, okay, where did these fighters rank? What was opinions on them at the time? And I think that that's what makes this compelling is we're not just doing, hey, what's going to get the most views? We're saying what's the most relevant story in boxing this week, as opposed to, okay, what's the biggest headline we could make to get this to the most eyeballs? We're saying what's the most relevant stories that boxing fans want to have. And that's been kind of my mission statement. If people listen to the show, maybe we predict a fight here and there, but we don't really predict fights. We kind of talk about fights because I think everybody's like, oh man, let me just give you my opinion. And you get like the same boring rehashed thing that no one wants to listen to. Right. So I think that it's more interesting to hear a dialogue based around these things, talking through scenarios. And that's been kind of the goal of this channel is to do that. So Adam, I appreciate you saying you like this show a lot so far. The key word is so far, you know, we got time to possibly lose you. So never
we have Wi-Fi issues. We'll see.
Don't watch any of the past episodes, you know, just stay right here, tune in.
Don't watch the first probably 42 episodes we did, because it's like the first 4 minutes are me by myself.
I mean, the tech department has really stepped up their game. Man K Crazy, why do you think Top Rank matched Guido versus Efe Ajogba? I'll take this. Call me Teacher Dakota.
Go ahead, Loki.
Okay, thank you. I don't think they know what to do with either one of them. I don't think they have a plan. They don't know what to do with either. You know, they need an opponent for Jared Anderson. Efe, I think, is his sparring partner, has a good relationship, so they don't want to fight, I believe. So Efe kind of sits in a weird spot in that degree. Guido had a loss to Johnny Rice. I think there's like a feeling like we don't know how far he can go. So this is, to me, it's just kind of like whoever loses this fight, you're really in danger of being cut. Whoever wins this fight, you're probably going to end up like, if Efe wins, maybe he fights Brandon Moore or someone like that. And if Guido wins, I think he goes, well, no, but I mean, I think that like Efe's
Torres.
And now we're talking, what was his name? Jolioff, the big.
How about the guy that Fabio Wardley just fought? He's fucking great.
But I mean, I think that like, what's the point of this fight, right? Is what they're saying. Why did they match him? Because they need one of these guys to be able to be put into a contender main event type fight. And they just don't frankly have the interest as of right now. So maybe a win here could get them in that spot. But I think the answer, in my opinion, is they don't know what to do with either fighter. If I'm being honest.
And that, well, and even if they don't know what to do with them, I think this is a good thing to do with them. So problem solved.
Yeah. And I think that there's nothing wrong with, okay, you have two signed fighters, but you don't know what their ceiling is and you don't know what kind of fight matches that you can make. Well, this is a crossroads fight for both guys. And I think
you remember when Benavidez and Andre were going to fight? That was what I'm saying. It's like, these two guys need each other. This is one of those. These two guys just kind of need each other, I think.
Man K Crazy, Guido fighting nobody's except for Johnny Rice and one other. I mean, yeah, but I mean, He also, I think, was inactive, and it's hard to judge these guys until they get to where they're going. You know, like a lot of that's the developmental circuit too. Mm-hmm. And he was winning the Johnny Rice until he wasn't winning the Johnny Rice fight. You know, he was doing really good. You'll be all right with me. That's really good. Guido feels the same level as Dempsey, McKean, and Joe Goodall. I mean, that's a fair assessment, but I think there's a little bit more motor in him. I think he throws a lot more punches.
I think there's more skill as well. I think he's got a little more IQ than Joe Goodall.
Yeah, he's a thinker. So that's our questions for the week. So I think we're done, Dakota. What can people expect from you this week?
Next couple of weeks, I'm going to be on the road, but I'll still be here on the show. You just may not see as much of me on social media. I'll be on a job, but catch us next week. I'll be here.
Okay, that's great.